The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hello, and welcome to The Upgrade, the podcast from the team at Lifehacker, where we help you improve your life one week at a time. I'm Melissa Kirsch, editor-in-chief of Lifehacker.
And I'm Alice Bradley, Lifehacker's deputy editor.
And today we're talking about how to be nice. You know how you're a tightly wound Scrooge who never does anything generous for anyone?
I do, Melissa, thanks. And you know how you're a curmudgeonly shrew who would sooner drown a litter of puppies and hold the door for me?
I do know that. Well, we wanted to see if it was possible to be just a shred nicer this holiday season.
While we know that being sarcastic and cutting is a good defense mechanism and makes you fun at parties, when is it actually good to be nice? There must be some times when it's helpful. When does niceness do more harm than good? Does being nice make you a good person?
To help us answer these questions, we're joined by the so-called nicest guy in comedy, comedian Josh Gondelman.
Part of it is I have a sweet temperament that is like not as common in men. You know, I used to teach preschool, and I think when I say that on stage, people are not surprised.
Our producer, Michaela, also went outside the confines of our office tower to find out what the people around New York think makes a nice person.
Could I ask you a couple of questions about niceness?
Niceness? What do you mean? People are nice?
And while we're on the subject of being nice, we would like to call on you, our listeners, to do something nice for us. Won't you be a doll and answer a survey about the upgrade?
Yes, be a dear. Take our quick, fun survey at lifehacker.com/upgrade survey. You'll get to tell us about you, tell us about us, what you love about us, and what you hate about us.
It's so short and shouldn't take you more than 3 minutes to complete. Please do it. It's at lifehacker.com/upgrade survey.
Please.
And thanks.
With that out of the way, let's hear what people in New York had to say about niceness.
Hello.
How are you?
Good, how are you?
Good.
I work for a podcast called The Upgrade. Could I ask you a few questions about niceness?
What about niceness?
Well, first of all, do you consider yourself a nice person?
Yes, I do.
What are the qualities that make someone nice?
Somebody who thinks about others first, before them.
Someone that is humble, kind, and treat others with respect.
Well, kind, generous, smiling, say hello, helpful.
What qualifies as nice in your eyes?
In my eyes, I would say, like, thinking of others before yourself kind of situation, like treating others the way you want to be treated.
Caring and understanding, wanting to be around other people.
Treating somebody the way I want to be treated.
Do you think you can ever be too nice?
No, you can never be too nice.
I don't think so. Should be nice all the time.
No.
Nope.
Do you think you can ever be too nice?
Yeah.
How?
I would say, like, you could be too nice to the point where someone takes advantage of you. Yeah, like, take advantage and essentially, like, kind of, like, not necessarily abuse you, but kind of, like, treat you bad, if that makes any sense.
If you're too nice, people walk all over you.
Can you think of a time where being nice didn't really work in your favor?
I want to say in my current job, my coworkers kind of tend to take advantage of that. So the fact that you are nice and try to kind of help them out, they kind of take advantage and just, like, I guess, become lazy.
What's the nicest thing you've ever done?
What's the nicest thing I've ever done?
Ask mom out?
Ask my mom out. Take my mom out.
Nice. Is there an example of how you were nice recently?
Just a minute ago, I was shoved out into the street by somebody who was in a hurry, and I kind of stood out of the way, and he just kind of looked back at me like, you want to start something? I'm going, hey, it's probably my fault. Sorry, I was too slow. But, you know, gave him the benefit of the doubt.
That is very nice.
Well, thank you.
Why do you think people take advantage of nice people?
Because they are so nice that they'll bend over backwards just to not get into any type of a conflict or, you know, not to cause waves. They're the kinds that just like the smooth water, you know.
Sometimes I think it's just to see how far they can push, like, their limits with others.
They're gullible.
Why do you think people take advantage of nice people?
I don't know. I really don't know, but that's not nice.
And now it's time for the interview. Our guest this week is writer and comedian Josh Gondelman. Josh has been a writer for Last Week Tonight with John Oliver, for which he won 2 Peabody Awards and 3 Emmys. And he's currently senior staff writer and producer for the Showtime series Desus and Mero.
Josh is often referred to as the nicest guy in comedy. And this past year, he came out with a stand-up album called Dancing on a Weeknight, as well as a new book called Nice Try, Stories of Best Intentions and Mixed Results. We invited him into the studio to talk about why being nice isn't always a great thing.
Josh, thank you so much for coming here today.
Thank you for having me here today.
So you're widely known as the nicest guy in comedy. Why do you think that particular quality stands out about you among your peers and your fans?
Oh, well, thank you. First of all, I dispute the notion that I'm widely known, but that is, as far as I have a reputation, that is, I think, the reputation that I have. And I think part of why there are so many nice and kind people in comedy. That's a fact that I feel like I want to get out in front because it is, I'm not like the only one. It's just that it stuck with me. And I think part of it is I have a sweet temperament that is like not as common in men. So I think it stands out in a way that like women are expected to be like genial and accommodating. So like I don't want to overclaim credit for just like regular human qualities. But also, I think it's that like on stage, I also come across as friendly, where there are like lots of people who are lovely human beings, but as performers have like more of an edge to their comedy or more of like an aggression to their comedy, which is like not to say that that is wrong or bad. I think I like love a lot of that flavor of comedy that, you know, I like a real dark joke, but like I'm also very like, you know, I used to teach preschool, and I think when I say that on stage, people are not surprised.
You're not like the Don Rickles of comedy, in other words.
No. Part of it is like naturally people don't buy it when I'm mean on stage. Like it feels off tone for just like the presentation and my personal like bearing. And then the other thing is that like as I came to know that more, I can write for myself better. And yeah. So like I write for, even if I'm talking about, you know, deeper issues or shallower issues, I know how to do it from the perspective that people see me as coming from. So I can like get across the ideas that I want to get across in the vessel that like people are perceiving.
Did you try in the beginning to be harder or meaner? Did you feel like you needed to be?
I think there have been various times where I've like tried little things of like, oh, this is, I've seen other people try things like this or do things like this, or this is a joke that technically should work, but I just can't sell it, or it is just inauthentic to like what I want to communicate. Like it doesn't feel like it comes from the same point of view, because like a lot of the time it wouldn't.
Right.
There was never like a full phase where I put on a leather jacket and like smoked on stage and told dirty nursery rhymes or whatever.
Well, and what you're describing, I think, you know, are some of like the sort of superficial things that we think of as nice, like that you're not taking cheap shots at people. But I feel like you have this reputation and people sense something about you that's sort of intrinsic, that like comes from like inside of you. Do you have a way of quantifying that or articulating that?
That's a great question. I think people get me right a lot, which is fortunate. And I don't fully know how that's achieved. But like, I think I've had a long-standing, like, legacy is the wrong word, but I have a longstanding experience of people mostly like reading me correctly. And occasionally people don't. I think occasionally someone will be like, this isn't what you're really like. This is concealing something, or you're pulling levers with your general like demeanor and behavior. But I think most of the time people see and react to me in good faith, which is like incredibly fortunate because a lot of people, I think, don't get that benefit of the doubt.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Did your parents actively seek to instill niceness in you, or did they model it? Were they like, you know, the most important thing is to be a mensch? Or
they were very, when I was a little more like bratty and snotty as a kid, which I don't, you know, I don't know the extent of it or how long it lasted. I feel very mortified by all my behavior as a child and then as a younger adult and currently. But like at that time, they were very, I remember very consciously being like, there is a level of respect that you owe to people given these situations. And I think it was like very important to my parents that I treat people well, even if I was upset with them or didn't like the way they did things. And which I think is like a very important quality in many relationships. Like, obviously, like, I think if I had been being like legitimately mistreated by people, they wouldn't have been like, stuff it down, loser. But it was, that was very helpful. And they modeled it too, I think. Like my dad was like a lovely person in the home, but also he would talk about like speaking out at these big union meetings against ownership and that kind of thing, where it's like, oh, so there is a time and place to be like, fuck off, I don't have to take what you're giving me. But as long as the spectrum is like disagreement rather than abuse or mistreatment, then it's like, treat people kindly. It was a very important tenet of my household.
What's the quote from Patrick Swayze in Roadhouse?
Oh, it's long, but it's be nice until it's time to not be nice.
Right.
Is the core of it. He's the bouncer at the Double Deuce in Kansas City. And there's like a real rough and tumble other slate of bar employees who are just used to like when someone misbehaves at the bar, they just beat the shit out of him. And so he came in and said like, you have to be nice. That's like how you deal with people. And then if they are not having it, you be nice as you walk them out. And then if there's too much to deal with, you get a second person to help you walk them out and you're both nice. And, they said, be nice until it's time to not be nice. And then someone says, well, how do I know when it's time? And he said, I'll tell you.
Evidence that I am not nice is that my favorite quote from Roadhouse is, you're too stupid to have fun.
Oh, man, it's so good. There's so many good Roadhouse quotes. I think my friend and writer and performer Gabby Dunn has a Roadhouse pain don't hurt tattoo, which is like an incredible quote. Yeah. He had stitched himself up after some kind of bar fight.
Yeah.
I have to confess, I have never seen Roadhouse. And now I think I have to.
It's an important film.
Yeah. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
It doesn't make a lot of sense, but it has as many like excellent, enjoyable moments as you would hope out of a movie of its length.
The Upgrade is brought to you by Thinkful. Today, every industry uses tech. High-paying careers in software engineering, data analytics, data science, and product design are vital to our future. To take your place in the world's next workforce, you need the right tech skills. You need an education that leads to a career. You need Thinkful. Thinkful is a better way to learn. All of their courses are taken completely online with full-time and flex study options. So here's what you can do. You can commit 100% or keep working while you level up your skills. Thinkful offers an unmatched level of one-on-one support. You're paired with a personal mentor on day one who is always on hand to help you out along the way. You'll also work with an expert career advisor, helping you put together the perfect resume and organizing mock interviews to ensure you're hired within 6 months of completing the course. The best part? If they don't help you get a job within 6 months, get this, your tuition is fully reimbursed. Thinkful is focused on high growth fields that are building the future of tech. Their graduates have gone on to work for companies like Google, Amazon, IBM, and Boeing. It's time to take your place in the world's next workforce with Thinkful. Go to thinkful.com/theupgrade to start building the future you want. That's thinkful.com/theupgrade.
So nice is such a generic descriptor for people. Mm-hmm. What are the qualities that when you see them compel you to describe somebody or something as nice? Like, what is nice?
I think there's I think a lot about the difference between, I'm just voice cracking all over the place, like sweating, like never had this question before. I think a lot about the difference between like niceness and goodness. And so I think nice is pleasant, polite, agreeable. You can be around someone without, you know, without undue conflict. And I think those are like, in many instances, valuable qualities. But I'm also, I think so much about goodness in terms of like, maybe being willing to do uncomfortable things that are beneficial, and whether it's like generous or righteous. And so a lot of the time they're the same, right? Niceness and goodness. Like giving someone you love a present that they appreciate for their birthday is nice and good. But like someone asking you advice on something and you not telling them it's a bad idea, when it's a bad idea, you being like, oh, I think that's great. You're great. This is great. Is like, technically probably nice, but it's not good. And then there's, you know, there's more on that spectrum. But so there is a difference. I was talking with a colleague yesterday about how someone said, how do I look right now? How does this outfit look? And then she said, never mind, you're too, to my friend Alana from work, she said, you're too nice. I don't trust what I don't, you're going to say it's good.
Right.
And so I think there is like a way in which you can be nice, that it is, even in low stakes situations, that's not like super beneficial.
Right. Well, and then is that sort of in a way saying that you're inauthentic or that you're undiscerning or something, that your niceness is your prevailing quality and it makes it so you're not discerning?
I think it could mean either thing, right? Like it could mean inauthentic, like you could be being nice for the sake of like eliding difficult situations, avoiding difficult situations, or it could be over generous, right? Like, oh, this is great. Which like, I do fall into that sometimes. I like a lot of things. And I'm like, I am prone to giving people credit for showing their work in a lot of ways. Like, and I don't think I interpret people generously when they're unkind or when they're grotesque. But I do think like there's enough stuff that I like, art, that I'll be like, oh, I see what they're going for there. That's pretty cool. And then someone will go, yeah, but it stinks. And I'm like, yeah, I guess that's also true.
I think about this a lot in terms of like compassion. You know, there's like a Tibetan Buddhist teacher who has this term, idiot compassion. And it's contrasted to wise compassion, which I think it means that you are giving compassion to somebody or you're comforting them because you can't bear to see them suffering. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that's selfish.
Yeah.
Right. So you're offering your friend poison instead of offering them medicine, mm-hmm. which I find really interesting. Like thinking about sort of the intention behind what you're doing and also the effect that it's going to have. And like sometimes when I'm nice or acting nice, I feel like I'm acting nice so that somebody else will act nice to me. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. then it's actually quite self-serving.
But that's fine. Like, right. That's just what you have to do to live a lot right. of the time, right?
Well, I don't know. I know people and I find these people like complex and interesting who are not going to be nice if they don't like the person or if they don't feel like being agreeable. And it doesn't always make other people not like them.
That's true. Yeah.
Sure. Right? Do you know what I'm saying?
That's true.
You know, like that, I think I use niceness as a way of maybe mistakenly fooling myself that I'm going to never, nobody's ever going to be mean to me if I'm nice to them.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Right, so it's a defense.
Yeah.
That is, I think I fall like into that at times too. Yes.
You know, like, I've been so nice to him. Why isn't he being nice to me? You know, like, right. I'm nice.
But there's also a level at which the opposite is true, where like, when there is somebody that I have like a real intimacy with, I feel liberated to be less nice, either in front of them because there's a trust, right? Or to them. Like I have my friend Jason is a really talented writer and we read each other's stuff a lot and give notes. And like, I know him really well. And I know that he takes thoughtful critique really well of his work. So like, I feel like there's a way to give it that's like, hey, these are the good parts. This is really great. Bolster this stuff. Like, don't lose this. And then you get into the like, but I don't think that this joke is up to your standards. I'm confused by this plot point. And I think you get that with trust, because I do think there are sometimes I'll give someone I don't know as well notes and I'll just go, either I'll have to be more ginger with how I approach the critique, or will not give as in-depth a criticism because it's like, I don't know if that's what they want, like the kind of rigor of, oh, this part is bad and doesn't work.
Right.
And especially if it's like a thing where you don't know how much better it can get. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Have you been in that experience where someone is like, look at this painting. Is it is it ready for me to sell in a gallery? And it's like, you can say, no, this stinks. Or you can go, well, there's things about it that you could change. But like, if you feel good about it, then let her rip.
Right, right. I've had the experience with my husband where there's an assumption that because we know each other and love each other and we know that each other is talented, he kind of skips the compliments and goes right for like, here's what sucks about this. And I'm like, no, you have to butter me up first.
Yeah.
I insist that you do.
Oh, I feel the same way. And it's when I am giving my wife notes on something, because we read for each other. She was like an incredibly helpful reader with my book. But when I'm reading for her, it's like, if I think something isn't as good as her best work, I'll say it gently, because like, I don't want her to have the experience of like putting out work with a flaw that she hasn't considered in it, and then have her experience like criticism from the world of readers.
Right.
Like it's almost like a protective impulse to be like, oh, this is really cool, but this phrasing, I feel like it could be interpreted in XYZ way. And maybe you want to like tighten that up a little bit, just so an uncharitable reader doesn't, like on the internet where people have no, or often have no stock in being kind or to strangers, will like dig in. But obviously you can't stop all of that.
That's right. That's something I've encountered as an editor for Life Hacker, just thinking I'll read stuff with my lens, which is, I know this writer, I know what they mean by this, but then I have to think, well, what would the reader think? How would they interpret it? Mm-hmm. And then I have to go to them and say, you need to fix it this way and this way and this way, thinking it's a protective thing. Like you're going to...
But you're not, you know, not being nice when you give feedback,
Of course.
Right? So that's just like, you're being nice in the way that you give feedback, right? Like, and you're not withholding the feedback for the sake of not hurting their feelings, right? Which, as you said, like helps nobody. So even when you have to have a difficult conversation or say something critical, being nice in those moments is a real skill, right?
I think so. And there's like a value to being clear with your, like you have to give a critique as firmly as you believe it in a lot of ways, like that you can say, oh, you know, it's really good. You might want to change this. But like, if you really mean like this part is monstrous and you don't realize it, like that's not something I've ever dealt with my buddy Jay or my wife Maris. But like, you know, if you're reading something and you're like, oh, there's a problem with this that you're not seeing. I think going, oh, you might want to clean up this language a little bit is like maybe not strong enough at times.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think you, like people who are like, I just call it like I see it. I give blunt notes and people appreciate that about me. And it's like, well, I bet they'd appreciate it more if you had a little softer touch.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I was talking with a friend this morning who I was submitting to a late night show a long time ago at his recommendation. And I asked him to read some of the jokes I wrote. And he said, I will never forget this because it was like legit. It was like, it stung in the moment. And maybe there was a softer way he could have said it. But the note he gave was, Josh, these are supposed to be good jokes. And I'm like, that's not how I would give that note.
Right.
But
right.
It also was like very bracing. And like, that was what he meant to say. Or that is the note he meant to give, is like, and it's hard to say like, you should do this more good.
Right.
But like, that is what he meant. I think he meant like, you're trying to hit some kind of like tone and people aren't going to be impressed by like, you're hitting this tone. You need to show that you're a good joke writer.
Right.
And I think the way I would have said it was like, hey, really nice job trying to like get in the ballpark of like what the show sounds like. But if you write these jokes with a little less of an ear for that and a little stronger bite or punch behind them, I think that will be the thing the readers really respond to, as opposed to like trying to match the show. But that's different styles. And like, but I do think I appreciated the note, but I think in the moment it would have felt a little more soothing for him to have just spent those couple extra sentences.
Right.
But I appreciated him giving the real note instead of just being like, wow, this really sounds like what we might air.
Do you think you can be too nice?
Yes, but I think it's like a timing of like what you said about idiot compassion, that it's when you're being nice at a time that calls for not being nice.
Right.
As Patrick Swayze would say.
Yeah. I think that people who are nice and who are concerned with how they come off and being nice, I think, often have a hard time being direct,
mm-hmm.
you know, because directness feels like it's sort of circumventing nice or not nice. It's just, it's cutting through everything and just being what it is. And I like what you're saying in that you're able to be direct, but you couch it in tact.
Yeah,
right?
I mean, there right. is a, there is a great value in being direct and like saying the thing you mean, but that doesn't mean that's the only thing you have to say.
Right.
Like, because you're talking to a human. So like they need to hear the critique or the request or whatever the difficult communication is, the thorny thing. They need to hear that. But also I think you have to buttress it a lot of the time, depending on your relationship, with an understanding and a generosity. I think it's like a helpful way to communicate. You know, like if somebody said like, I'm booking travel for the three of us to go to this event. Does this time work? And to send, even when it's a nice communication, or like a positive thing, right? Yeah, book that, is like so much less. It's like they're doing you a favor. Like, hey, thanks. This looks great. Go for it. Takes 10 more seconds to communicate. And the person isn't going to be like, what am I, your fucking dog? You know, like that when you say it in a more direct way. So I think even directness, even when things are positive, can be like, right. Expanded upon with like generosity and kindness, and it takes so little. The other caveat to can you be too nice is I think when you are giving to others in a way that like is bad for you, like to have no boundaries and to offer too much to others in a way that like you're doing something that's outside your comfort zone in a way that is like bad for your mental health, bad for your physical health. You feel like it's the wrong thing to do. It's just giving in a way that is like,
it depletes you.
Yes. And I don't think giving in general is a depleting action. Like, I don't think being generous to someone automatically lessens your supply of whatever you need, like psychically, physically, in terms of resources. But I do think there is a way that you could do that is harmful and that you probably shouldn't.
I think that's such a huge point, because being nice at your own expense in many ways is not a kind act, right?
No.
Because other people want you to have boundaries so they know how far they can go. And if you're just letting them run all over that, then you're going to resent them and it's going to end up with a lot of kind of bad feelings.
Right. It's not a wise deployment of your compassion.
No.
Yeah, or your niceness. You're also well known for your Twitter pep talks.
Yes, that is. I think that is something people know about me.
Yeah. What? Tell us about them.
So late at night, usually, it often happens late at night when I'm home and I get home late and my wife has long been asleep, or if I'm on the road and just like alone in a hotel room, I'll say, hey, if anybody needs to hear a kind word, let me know. I'll be here for 5 minutes giving pep talks. And people will say, oh, yeah, sure, great, sometimes, and which is fine. And then other times people will be more specific, which is sometimes helpful to me because it lets me be more targeted in my response. And usually I'll get several dozen to like a little over 100. And sometimes I have to go to sleep and finish the next morning. But usually I'll try to address everything within the initial window. But if somebody tweets at me 20 minutes later, I will try to respond, but I might not be quite as timely.
And so what's that experience like for you?
I find it really beneficial. It like elevates my mood. I think people feel very appreciative of just someone saying something nice to them. And it's not like a replacement for real things people need. You know, it's not therapy. It's not like an intimate friendship. But I do think it is something that people are like, everybody could use a little more encouragement. Almost every, I mean, again, some people are horrendous and are engaged in unworthy projects and malice against others. And I don't think we should be like, hey, Stephen Miller, I just bet if you keep plugging at it, your monstrous immigration policy will be the law of the land in no time. But I do think like in a lot of arenas, there like people could use just a small amount, a little nudge in a positive way.
Thank you so much for
talking
with us today.
Thank you for having me.
This has been awesome.
Oh, I had such a nice time.
Upgrade of the Week, where we talk about that one tiny thing that's making a big difference in our lives. Josh, what's your upgrade?
I am very psyched about the Dunkin' Donuts Beyond Sausage sandwich. I'm kind of always consciously trying to think about my like meat intake and the way I consume and how that affects the world. And sometimes I do a better job than other times of like being mindful of that. And I think the sandwich is really delicious. And it's like a very classic sausage, egg, and cheese. So it's not vegan, but it is meatless. And it's like, there's a nice spice to it. It's a good texture. It is like as good as any other like chain sausage patty, I think, if slightly different. And so it is delicious and feels like I'm making a slight effort towards cutting down on meat consumption, which is nice.
Nice. And you're a Dunkin' fan.
I'm a big, anybody who knows of me before this knows that I'm like an incredibly staunch Dunkin' Donuts partisan and drink Dunkin' Donuts iced coffee constantly and prefer it to many other technically superior iced coffees.
Very nice. Melissa, what's your upgrade?
I got a chainmail scrubber for my cast iron pans. It's a little square of chainmail, literally, like what a knight wears.
Cool. And wears. Present tense.
what a knight loves to wear. And you scrub your cast iron pans with it. You know, there are a lot of rules that people have around what they're going to do with their pan, including never cleaning it, which I cannot abide, or they're never going to use soap, or they're never going to use a sponge. I don't know. But things get caked up on there. I don't want anything caked up on there. I'm going to scrub it with the chain, which is great because you feel like you're doing something wrong. Like you can't use that on a Teflon pan. Mm-hmm. So you get to scrub your heart out and then I season it like a normal person. But it gets all the crap off and it's very satisfying and it goes in the dishwasher.
Ooh.
Yeah.
That's the key.
Yeah.
It doesn't create its own labor-intensive cleaning project after that.
No, it would, I think, if I didn't have a dishwasher.
Yeah, that's true.
But I think you can kind of just rinse it out because it's like once you get glop unsealed from the cast iron, it's not that gloppy anymore.
Yeah.
What's your upgrade, Alice?
So this one is actually an upgrade for my dog. I have a Chihuahua who's a ridiculous creature, not an animal that I thought I would get, but here we are with you have a pug. You have a pug.
Who just... an aberration in the eyes of science.
Just nature's little mysteries.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we're in a similar situation. So this one is an upgrade for my dog. So I've got this bed for her. Mm-hmm. It's called the Deep Sleep Calming Bed. Total Instagram advertisement that I fell for, but she loves it. And it's been so gratifying to watch her like sink into this bed that it makes me so happy every morning when I see her in it. Oh. Or when I come home from work and she's like just ensconced in her little
What's special
little
about
bed.
It?
I mean, it looks incredibly comfy in a way that her other dog bed didn't. Her other dog bed, she only humped whenever I was on the phone for some reason.
Okay, sure.
That was her move. She's like, you're on the phone, time to get humping. She'd get to the bed. It's the truth.
It's an attention thing.
I guess so. She never...
I know what Alice likes.
Check this out, huh? You're talking to someone who's not even here?
Yeah.
Check me out.
Yeah.
Look what I can do.
Look what's in the room with you.
Watch me
but
go.
But other than that, she ignored the bed. But this bed, she's like in, and it just seems like to sink in a way that the other bed didn't. The other bed seemed a little more structured. This one is pillowier. I don't know. It's really nice. So, yeah.
I want you to have one for yourself.
I kind of want one for myself, to be honest.
It sounds so delightful.
Yeah. I might have put my head in it once trying to... You know, kind of like lying down next to her and thinking like, oh, it's good. I'm getting my scent in it. So she'll use it more.
Very nice.
That's nice work.
Thank you,
Josh. This was great.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah.
Oh, this was such a treat.
And that's our show. The Upgrade is produced by Michaela Heck and mixed by Brad Fisher.
Please rate us on Apple Podcasts and leave us a review. What are you waiting for? Just open the Upgrade in your Apple Podcasts app. Scroll down till you see the stars and tap on all five of them. Please and thank you. You can also reach us by calling us at 347-687-8109 and leaving a voicemail or write to us at upgrade@lifehacker.com.
And don't forget to fill out our survey.
Yes, you can find it at lifehacker.com/upgrade survey or in the show notes for this very episode.
You can also find us on Twitter @lifehacker, on Instagram @lifehacker.com, that's all one word, and on Facebook @facebook.com/lifehacker. Sign up for Lifehacker's daily newsletter full of tips and tricks and hacks at lifehacker.com/newsletter. And you can find show notes for this and every episode of The Upgrade at lifehacker.com/the show.